just a little bit ago about there is a place of quiet rest near to the heart of God. And the song before that we were singing, "Oh, how the world to evil allures me. Oh, how my heart is tempted to sin. I must tell Jesus, and he will help me, over the world the victory to win." Now, what a contrast that is, walking in fellowship with God, near to the Lord, near to the heart of God, and then thinking of the allurements of the world. How that Satan is going about seeking to distract us, to divert us from the will of God, and eventually to devastate us so far as the things of God are concerned. And we do need to keep short accounts with the Lord. I want us to think along this line tonight as we turn in our Bibles to the book of Genesis, chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13, we want to consider, I think, a familiar Bible character tonight. Starting with Genesis chapter 13, and look down to verse 8. Now, before reading, let me refresh your memory as to the background of what we have here. You will remember in Genesis chapter 12 that the Lord communicated to Abram in the Ur of the Chaldees, what we know today as the southern part of Iraq. God communicated to Abram, his name wasn't changed to Abraham until chapter 17, but the Lord appeared unto Abram while he was living there in the Ur of the Chaldees. Stephen, in Acts chapter 7, in giving an overview of Jewish history to his national brothers, he said that the Lord of glory appeared to Abram. But in Genesis chapter 12, the Lord appeared to Abram and told him to leave his family, to leave his home there, and pack up, move out to a land that I will show thee. Now, we don't read where God instructed that Lot, Abram's nephew, should go with him. We don't read where God called Abram's father to go with him either, and it seems that Abram made no real progress in this journey that the Lord called him to until his father died. But I'm simply saying we don't read where God said for Abram's father to go or for Abram's nephew Lot to go. But that was the case. The father went with him. His nephew went with him. And Abram's servants and Lot's servants got to a point where there was some conflict. There was some strife. And so we pick up in chapter 13 and verse 8, where Abram said unto Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, And Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Let's go to the New Testament, to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2. And let's pick up at verse 4. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample or example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation or manner of living of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. And we'll stop our reading there. Bible characters are interesting, aren't they? Some here can think of hearing about Bible characters back from the time you were very small going to Sunday school. But Bible characters are interesting. And God has given to us a long list of these Bible characters. They give to us the records concerning the character and the conduct of many of these men and women of years gone by, to teach us truth and lessons regarding certain actions and attitudes and activities. We think of Adam is teaching us nothing else, and surely the story of Adam would teach us many lessons, as all of these Bible characters do. But if teaching us nothing else, the story of Adam teaches us the consequences of disobeying God. And I thought of Absalom. My, so many Bible characters come to mind. We read the story of Absalom, one of David's sons. And the story of Absalom teaches us, if nothing else, the danger of pride. We read of Noah, and his life teaches us the beauty of fearing God and obeying God. There was Enoch, who tells us of the delights of walking with God in fellowship. We think of Daniel. And we think of his companions, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, better known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We think of Daniel and his companions teaching us the dividends of a surrendered life. But we are thinking tonight of Lot. And we were singing about the dangers of the allurements of the world. How there are so many attractions. And our own selfish nature desires certain things. We can't blame everything on Satan. We blame it on our old sinful nature. We blame it on ourselves, but Satan certainly draws upon our old sinful nature in seeking to allure us away from the Lord, from the Word, from prayer, from Christian fellowship, to dabble in the things of the world and just to become ineffective, to become cold and indifferent so far as the things of God are concerned. And when we come to Lot, his life is set forth both not only in the Old Testament but in the New Testament, as we have read, and his life would teach us, if nothing else, the tragic consequences of making a wrong choice. We are creatures of choice, aren't we? God has made us that way. God has made us intelligent beings. He's given us the ability to think, to weigh the evidence, to determine all of the aspects, all of the consequences of making a choice. God has made us intelligent creatures. He says, now come and let us reason together, saith the Lord. And as we have said many times, God appeals to our intellect with truth. He appeals to our emotions with His love. And He appeals to that part of us that has the power of choice to make the right decision for Him and to stand for God, to stand for truth, to stand for the right. We have the power of choice. And there's a consequence with every choice we make. Now, we know this. This is basic. This is elementary. But there are consequences to all the choices we make. And we have stressed many times that God is sovereign, and though He gives to us the power of choice, we can decide to do whatever we want to do. But God, in His sovereignty, determines the consequences of the choices we make. In Proverbs 6 and 27, we read, "Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned?" And the answer is quite obvious. No, he can't do that. I mean, he can choose to take fire to his bosom. If he's so foolish to do so, he can do that. But he cannot choose to take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned. The burning is a consequence of the choice. We can choose to touch fire. That's our choice. We can choose to touch it if we want to. But we cannot choose to touch fire and not be burned. The burning comes with the choice. So God determines the consequences of the choice we make, or the choices we make. Well, in thinking of Lot, if you're taking notes or mental notes, put down an unwise choice. An unwise choice. Abram was one who walked in fellowship with God. It's interesting when you read of Abram in Genesis chapter 13 and on into Genesis chapter 19, and we'll be going there shortly. It's interesting that Abram dwelt at Hebron. Now, you hear from time to time, you hear in the news about Hebron in Israel. It's in the southern part of Israel. It is about 40 miles south of Jerusalem. And if you were to look at a map of Israel, you would see Hebron. And then if you were to look to the east, just a little ways, down to the bottom of the southern end of the Dead Sea, that is where Sodom and Gomorrah were. And on a clear day, you can see from one area to another. It's just a very short distance. But Abram dwelt in Hebron. Now, the word Hebron means fatness or fellowship. And it's interesting that the Lord appeared to Abram in the heat of the day. I mean, Scripture tells us that men love darkness because their deeds are evil. But no, the Lord appeared to Abram in the heat of the day at Hebron. He was in the place of fatness and fellowship. That was not the case with Lot. And here again, you're familiar, I take it, with the story. Lot was not in that place of fatness of fellowship. The Lord did not appear to him in the heat of the day. It was the evening when the Lord came to Sodom. But here is Abram, the senior, giving to Lot the choice. Now, Lot, it seems that we cannot work together. We cannot live together. There's so much conflict. So you go to the left, I'll go to the right. Or you go to the right, I'll go to the left. You make the choice, Lot. Where do you want to live? And wherever you go, I'll go in the opposite direction. My, how gracious that was on Abram's part. He should have made the choice for two reasons. For two reasons. Because God had already given to him all the land. And you will see in Genesis chapter 13 that after Lot made his choice, God appeared to him and reiterated the promise that he made to him earlier, that all the land was his. But here was Lot, who gave the choice, or Abram rather, who gave the choice to Lot when God had already given all of it to Abram. Number two, Abram could have made the choice because he was the senior. He had seniority over his nephew. But no, he's a humble man, and he is God-like, as we would say using the terminology today, Christ-like. But Abram was God-like. And so Lot made a choice. And he went according to sight. Lot, though a righteous man, and we want to stress that shortly, fell victim to that which many Christians today succumb, namely to have his interests, his ambitions, his hopes, his expectations circumscribed by the affairs of this world. He chose the well-watered plains of Sodom in the first place because they appeared to contribute most to his own advantage. But he was ensnared by the temptation of self-gratification. And so he hid the light of his testimony under a bushel, as we sometimes sing in the chorus. And he went in for the things of the world. Now, you know, if we did not have the New Testament concerning Lot, that is what we have in the New Testament about him, if we did not have what we have read from 2 Peter chapter 2, if we did not have that, we would put a question mark over him being a justified person, or we would say a saved person. In reading about Lot from the Old Testament, we would come to the conclusion that there just isn't any evidence here that he was a saved man. Now, it is true that Abraham, in bargaining with God on behalf of his nephew and his family members, he was arguing from the point of, if you find any righteous people there, because Abram knew that Lot was a righteous person. And Peter tells us that. Look back at 2 Peter chapter 2 if you have your Bibles open. We read in verse 7, and God delivered just Lot, that is, justified Lot, or we might read it, and properly so, and God delivered saved Lot. He delivered justified Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. So if we didn't have this in the New Testament, we would question whether or not Lot was truly saved. Yes, we do have the power of choice. And we can make, and we do make, decisions day after day, week after week, month after month. And for this decision of Lot to choose where he wanted to live became for him a determining factor. For Lot, it determined his fortunes in life. It determined his failure to serve God. It determined the kind of fellowship he would engage in. I started to say the kind of fellowship he would enjoy. He didn't enjoy it. His righteous soul was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. But his choice determined his fortunes in life, his failure to serve God, and the fellowship he would engage in. You know, we do read of some of these Bible characters making choices, the right choices. there is Moses, who, though for 40 years was taught in the ways of Egypt as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I mean, he had the very best that Egypt had to offer in every area of life. And after 40 years, he was on the backside of the desert for another 40 years. And then after that, another 40 years leading the Jewish people out of Egypt to the land of promise. But in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 and 25, we read of Moses, who chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He made a choice. He had so much going for him, but he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. I think of Joshua. Joshua 24 and verse 15. Joshua made a choice. Well, he made a number of choices, but I'm thinking of this one. He said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That's a good choice. I think of Nehemiah, who came back to Jerusalem after the Babylonian captivity. They were there for about 70 years, right at 70 years. And here again, you know the story. Nehemiah and others came back, and God used Nehemiah to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. The temple was built, but he used Nehemiah primarily in the building of the wall of the city. And there were those who were Nehemiah's enemies, and we would say God's enemies. And they tried to get Nehemiah to stop building that wall. They wanted him to come down. But he made a choice, and he expressed that choice in Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 3. He said, "I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down to you. I'm doing a great work." I think of Daniel. You read in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. When the Israelites were taken from Jerusalem and from what we know today as Israel to Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to benefit himself and Babylon by using some of the elite of the Jewish people, some of the best of the Jewish people, the intelligent people. The ones who were really on the cutting edge. And he wanted to use Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and others. And so he wanted to give them a special diet. He took care of them. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. So all of these Bible characters that we know about and have heard about over the years, they made choices. Well, Lot made a choice, and it was an unwise choice. He didn't have what we would call the long view. You know, we think of David writing Psalm 23, and he spoke about the difficulties of this life, but he had that long view. And he said, "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." When you read a portion like Psalm 73, you remember the psalmist there was overwhelmed by the allurements of the world. I mean, he came to the conclusion that the life of the believer is a hard life. It's not easy. And the psalmist writes in Psalm 73 that unbelievers all about him seem to have everything that they want. And it seems they couldn't care less about God or the things of God. And he says, in essence, "Now, you know, I have put my faith and trust in the Lord, and I want to live for him. I want to satisfy him. I want to bring him honor and glory. And yet it's so difficult. I put my trust in the Lord, and it seems I'm plagued day and night. I'm having all kinds of problems. And those all about me couldn't care less about God or the things of God. Those who ask, well, how does God know? And is there any knowledge in the Most High? They seem to have no problems at all. They seem to have everything in life that they want. Any rate, the psalmist said, this was too much for me. He said, my feet well nigh slipped. It was just too painful for me. It was just too much for me to try to take in until I went into the sanctuary of the Lord. And it was in the sanctuary of the Lord, that is, in the presence of the Lord, he got that long view. Not just the here and now, but the hereafter. He said, this was too painful for me until I went into the sanctuary of the Lord. Then understood I their end. Which means that he also understood his end as a believer. Yeah, we must keep the long view in mind. I'm going to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And one day, all of this will fade away. And I'll be with the Lord forever. Well, he made an unwise choice. Now, we read back in Genesis chapter 13 and verse 13, but the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Look at a verse in Ezekiel chapter 16. Ezekiel chapter 16. Come down to verse 49. Ezekiel 16 and 49. Now note what we have here. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy, and they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. My, my. What a testimony concerning the Sodomites and the people of Gomorrah. Which brings me to point number two. Not only an unwise choice, but an ungodly environment. An ungodly environment. We read in Genesis chapter 13, after Lot made his choice, Abram gave to him the choice to go in any direction he wished, and he considered the well-watered plains of Sodom. Now, we are thinking of the Jordan River coming down from the Galilee, and I might even go further north than that. We think of the snow water flowing from Mount Hermon into the Sea of Galilee. This is one of the reasons, I just inject this thought, this is one of the reasons why the Jewish people do not want to give the Golan Heights back to Syria. You remember they took the Golan Heights some years ago under Ariel Sharon. And having control of the Golan Heights assures the Jewish people of a good water supply coming from Mount Hermon. And if they were to give the Golan Heights back to Syria, then there is the danger of them so controlling that water as to put the country of Israel in jeopardy so far as their water supply is concerned. But Here Lot looked at the well-watered plains of Jordan, with that water flowing from Hermon into the Galilee and then on down the Jordan River into the Dead Sea. And we think of that lush area down around the Jordan River and on down in that area being the breadbasket of the country, actually. And Lot chose him the well-watered plains of Sodom. And we read that he pitched his tent toward Sodom. But it's not long before he's living on Main Street. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. The inhabitants of Sodom were wealthy and wicked. That seems to be the indication from what we read in Ezekiel 16 and verses 49 and 50. They were wealthy and wicked. Intemperance, idolatry, and indifference to the claims of God ruled their hearts. And Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. And next thing you know, he's living on Main Street. And lo and behold, it's not long before he's one of the city officials ruling at the gate. And his spiritual life was null and void. An ungodly environment. You know, as I sat at my desk earlier thinking of Lot and the progression downward, I couldn't help but think of Psalm 1. You need not turn there. You're familiar with it. We read in Psalm 1, "Blessed is the man." Now note the progression here. "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful." Walking, standing, and sitting. And that's the way it is. Here's a person who is walking. He's walking along, but something gets his interest, and so he stops. Now he's standing. And whatever caused him to stop, whatever got his interest that caused him to stop his walking, has now so captivated him that he's sitting. That's the way it was with Peter when he was by that fire that night warming himself. You talk about being cold. He was cold. He was a cold Christian. He was sitting at the fire of the wicked ones denying the Lord Jesus. But this is the progression downward. He chose the well-watered plains of Sodom, and there's a consequence with that choice. One of the consequences is an ungodly environment. And then I put down an unsatisfied heart. Heart, no peace in his heart. I mean, can you really take these words in? God delivered, we read in 2 Peter chapter 2, God delivered, justified Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation, that is, with the filthy manner of living of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed, and the word is used twice there, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. This righteous man was so vexed living among these wicked people. Well, what does the word vex mean? I looked it up. It means it wore him down. It wore him down day after day, listening to the filthy language and the filthy deeds that were being conducted. It wore him down from day to day, an unsatisfied heart. You know, we think of the psalmist in Psalm 40. The Lord delivered me and brought me up also out of an horrible pit and set my feet upon a rock and established my goings and hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God, and many shall see it and fear and trust in the Lord. There was no song in Lot's heart. He was saved, but he wasn't going about singing, "I have a song which Jesus gave me. It was sent from heaven above." He was being worn down day by day, vexed in his righteous soul by what he heard and what he saw all about him. What a contrast. And you know, no Christian is happy out of the will of God. When we as Christians get out of fellowship with God, we're really no use to the world, and we're no use to God. Now, I think you will agree with me. I mean, let's face it. There have been times that we all have been out of fellowship with the Lord, and it's miserable. We might think we are enjoying whatever is keeping us away from maintaining this close walk with the Lord that we were singing about, near to the heart of God. But there's no joy. There's no real happiness. There cannot be. Lot saw the sin in full bloom, and Lot had no power to resist greed. We might say, "Well, my goodness, if this was the case, why didn't he move?" Because, listen, we can be so tempted and so allured that when we stop our walk and we stand and then we're sitting in a situation like that, we lose the power. We lose the power. Or we are so ashamed of the after. Well, at any rate, an unsatisfied heart. And then I put down an unholy influence. An unholy influence. Turn back to Genesis chapter 19. I spoke of this earlier. Genesis chapter 19. Now, let's pick up at verse 12. "And the men said unto Lot, Hast thou here any besides, son-in-law, or thy sons, and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." Look at these sad words. "But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. Dad, what's the matter with you? You're getting religious all of a sudden. Why are you so excited? Why, Dad, you've been living here all this time. One of the officials in the city." My, what a testimony. An ungodly influence. And he lost so much. Lot has had a spiritual collapse. You know the story of how Lot's wife looked back. She had a divided heart. She looked back. And I take it that you know the story of how the daughters had this relationship with their father. And they became the mothers of Moab and Ammon, enemies of the people of God. And his testimony was the laughingstock of his children. "He seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law." What a testimony. It's all because of a choice he made. And lastly, and we close with this, his unspeakable loss. It all began when he made his choice. He lost the society of the spiritual when he left Abram, his uncle. He lost the society of the spiritual. He went and lived with these wicked people. He lost the sanctity of husband-wife relationship. His wife had a divided heart. She was concerned about Sodom. That's where her heart was. And that tells you something of his testimony. He lost the souls of his children. He lost his spiritual power. He lost his spiritual testimony. And he lost the respect of the Sodomites. And this is the way it is when we are out of touch with God. We don't have the respect of our brothers and sisters in Christ, and we don't have the respect of the world either. That is the way it is. No one took him seriously. And yet he was saved, even so, as by fire. He was saved, and that was about it. The consequences of a wrong choice. Let's sing one stanza before we go, at least one. 443, I think, is the number that I want. 443. Let's sing the first stanza only. Only one life to offer, Jesus, my Lord and King. Only one tongue to praise Thee and Thy mercy sing. Only one heart's devotion, Savior, oh may it be, consecrated alone to Thy matchless glory, yielded fully to Thee. 443, just the first stanza.